Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, March 26th. I'm Ray Graff. It's Gardening Today, and we welcome back Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum, and Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch. Dale Isla brought an armful of sticks. It's like the cover of Led Zeppelin 4. Give us a call at 800-348-2551 if you have a question. 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. It's Gardening. Fred, Bob, Dale Isla, and Greg, your calls coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. The gardeners are back. They're ready to take your calls. Bob Graves is co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Dale Isla Riggs is the owner and operator of the Berry Patch in Steventown. Greg Ward is with Ward's Nursery, gardening destination in Great Barrington, Mass. And Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Number to call here is 800-348-2551. If you have a gardening question, 800-348-2551, or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org, that's the email. And the number, as we roll into another gardening show, 800-348-2551. Hello, gardeners. Welcome back.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for having us, right?
All right, let's find out what's new. Greg Ward, what's happening over at the Ward's Nursery?
Well, it's actually starting to fill up outside, you know, fruit trees, lots of ornamental shrubs, certainly pansies. Pansies are sort of the beginning annuals that you can use when the weather is still a little chilly. They'll take the mid-20s standing up, and then if it's teens, they'll sit down for a minute, and then they'll stand up again,
okay,
which is really nice. We had a couple of pruning workshops. I think we're going to have another one this Saturday. I think they're all full, but if you look on the website, they might have some room. And then two weeks ago, I forgot to bring this because this is the spring blooming witch hazel that I think this is from my yard, and it opened up right around the first couple of days of March. And so you go, oh, well, you know, nice little yellow spidery petals. You know, the little calyx is not as bright as some. This one's called Westerstead, but everyone should take a little sniff of that.
All right, Bob, have a sniff.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a good thing you didn't bring pansies because I'd have to eat that.
Really?
Yeah, we've got this at the Arboretum as well. It's also in bloom.
Oh, it is very nice.
It's fragrant.
Yeah, it's very nice.
It's very nice.
So you can walk out in the woods and find them pretty easily right now.
Okay.
So yeah, so the spring blooming ones, you know, they're a cross. Most of them anyway are a cross between Japanese and Chinese, two different species, Japonica and, you know, Hemimelis japonica, Hemimelis mollis. There's a whole bunch of them. Some of them, instead of yellow petals, they're actually sort of a red or burgundy.
Uh-huh.
So lots of it, which looks really good when there's still snow on the ground.
Yeah.
But to me, the red ones disappear as soon as the snow goes away.
All right. Well, you've prepared very well, and you get an A on this.
Thank you.
Can you top that, Bob?
No.
No? Well, what's happening at Fadigan's?
Well, we are just finishing up our new greenhouse operation, and we hope to have it open in the next couple of weeks.
Nice.
And we're kind of regrading and paving and getting ready and still selling a lot of tropical houseplants because you get a nice warm day like today, and people want to do something outside, but there's really not too much they can do yet, so they're looking for a plant.
So you think I should have called off the show then for this week? Not much to do?
Oh, there's plenty to
do,
but not a lot to plant right now.
Way to be a team player. Fred, what's going on over at the Landis Arboretum?
Yep, so we're actually gearing up this weekend for the Garden and Flower, Capital Region Garden and Flower Expo over at Hudson Valley Community College. So we're doing a booth all weekend long. The show runs Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'm doing two presentations on Friday, pruning, and also on soils. And I'm doing two more presentations on Saturday. They're going to be at 11 and 1 for the presentations, but the booth will be there all weekend.
You're doing two shows a day.
Two shows a day on Friday, two shows on Saturday. I used to do three days in a row, but you know, my voice about a third day starts running out.
You ever think about bringing the guitar and doing a little tune for everybody?
You know, it's crossed my mind, especially if we have an AV problem, you know, I can double up,
right.
You know, and that's happened before. Okay, it's not working. Oh. You know, I kind of wish I brought the guitar or the juggle sticks.
Michael, row the boat ashore.
But I don't believe you would lose your voice after three sessions.
Yeah,
well, I think you could keep talking
too.
Forever.
Well, it is rumored that is the case. So.
Dale Isla Riggs, you brought twigs. What's up?
So I brought twigs because one of the things we're doing is finishing up raspberry pruning, and I brought props. So rather than show and tell, it's describe and tell. And I thought my knowledgeable team members here might be able to help me do some descriptions since we always have questions about how you tell a fall bearing raspberry from a summer bearing raspberry at this time of year.
Interesting. All right. Yeah. Well, let's have at it. Let's
All
talk
right.
twigs.
So, you know, people are always wondering about fall raspberries and the thing that you look for on a fall raspberry, and maybe my teammates here can help describe it, but you can actually see little remnants of the fruit from last year. So there's what looked like old flowers were actually where the fruit were.
What, the deer? Nobody ate that?
Just a little dry stem with the sepals left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's always on the top because they only produce fruit in the fall.
Right.
And they will produce fruit this year as long as they didn't bear fruit too far down the stem. So the one that I have here is about a 3 foot long cane, but there's actually, you can see how it had fruit down probably about 2 feet down the stem from the top last year. So this should just get cut to the ground. These bottom buds are not going to produce anything useful this year. So the fall-bearing raspberries, just cut it to the ground because you're never going to get viable flower buds out of something that's growing at the bottom foot of a raspberry cane.
This is kind of dangerous. You almost flogged
Greg
Ward
there. I
did almost
get Greg.
I mean, he has it coming, clearly.
I'm a little nervous.
Yeah.
And the show's not over yet.
Right.
Well, when you walked up, I was outside. When you walked up, I thought you were dousing. I said, what's going on?
No, it's also my protective device for...
Yeah, I'm sure it helps, right?
Yeah, that's covered with prickles and all that.
So nice. Thanks for bringing it.
Then the other one is a summer-bearing raspberry that you can tell because it will have side branches. And if it has side branches, those are the ones that you want to cut down to the ground because these had fruit last year. And so it was a second-year cane that produced fruit. So that's not going to do anything again. So you cut those to the ground. But if you have canes that are just one piece, and maybe Greg can find one there for me.
Yes.
One piece, and there's no side branches yet.
Oh, beautiful.
Or only one.
That's my favorite one so far, Greg. That's beautiful. Yeah.
Then those are summer bearers, and you just cut off the very ends where there might be a little bit of winter damage.
Oh, yeah.
And you're going to get fruit the entire length of that cane. There's going to be other side branches that come out from each bud. And those are the ones you want to keep.
So cool. And then you brought a couple bags of leaves, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So
what'd you bring?
We are harvesting spinach now.
Oh, already?
And so we're going to do a taste test between green leaf spinach and red veined spinach.
That is amazing. All right. Well, we'll do that after we take care of some emails here, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll try some spinach. It's the Gardening Show, and we are off to a very demented start. We've had twigs and leaves and all kinds of crazy stuff. Dale Isla Riggs, Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves join us. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. All right. Joanne wrote in this morning from Chester, New York. With the early cold this past winter, I never got to install protection around my 7-foot-tall arborvitae. It, of course, was nearly decimated by hungry deer. The top is full and green, but the entire perimeter from about 2 to 5 feet is just twigs. Is there anything I could do or should do to encourage new growth?
Yeah, the good thing about those is that they regenerate from older wood. So in most cases, if you just keep the deer, and this time of year, they won't probably do much more browsing at this stage of the game. The grass is going to get green, and they're going to have a lot of other food. So protect them. Just, you know, next year, protect them. You probably won't have to do too much this year. It's probably going to, you know, like I said, just leave them alone. It'll probably green up quite nicely for you.
Okay.
Next year, put a little fence around them and prevent it.
Worth fertilizing them, for
sure. Worth fertilizing, though.
And don't let them, you know, got to protect them, because if they get defoliated like that year after year, they're not coming back.
They're not.
Right. All right.
And I would just say that if, you know, they're well established, the tops could get cut just a little bit. You know, take some part of the top, 6, 8, 10, 12 inches off the top, because that will allow the energy to direct.
It makes sense. Even this late, even after it has already been...
Correct, definitely.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, you want to basically divert that energy.
This spring.
And fertilizer-wise, it's great timing coming up here. This is, you know, start thinking about fertilizing all trees and shrubs.
Michael writes in, my English boxwood are looking pretty bad after this tough winter. They are a few years old. I kept the snow around them, as you had suggested in your winter show. Fertilized in late fall. Suggestions greatly appreciated.
Just wait.
Yeah, yep. Right now, boxwood, if they've made it through the winter, which they should have, can show a bronzing color.
Yep. Yeah.
It's not a desiccation. It's not that those leaves are dead. They just have a sort of a bronzy pigment to them, and they will green up once we get to warm weather. It could actually be the middle of May, though, before you see that.
There's a lot of bronzing out there right now. Yep. Yews and other evergreens. Huh. A lot of things look peaked and off color. But that's just what happens in a winter like this.
Yeah, especially when it's been cold this, and it's been, you know, extended amounts of cold.
There's difference between bronzing and brown.
Definitely a difference. Yeah, in most cases, it's going to come back. I mean, even like pines and things I've seen with some off-color needles, and it's because of that really cold, long winter. But most of them will probably come back, especially if they were good last year.
One thing I did notice driving yesterday was white pines along a highway are all browned up.
Yep.
But it's because of salt.
Salt spray.
The spray from the plows.
Yep. Yeah, I'm seeing
that
a lot of evergreens.
Like that.
Can I just say on the boxwood, if they weren't heavily trimmed last late summer or certainly fall, so that they're a little fluffy, as we get into April, a light trimming will allow the buds to grow from the inner part, and so it will be a prettier, greener plant when it does push out in May.
All right, second question from Mike, and then we'll make it quick and take a break and hit the phones. 800-348-2551. Question two. I'm planning on using, and Mike is in Poughkeepsie, by the way, I'm planning on using raised growing beds on my three-sided screened-in porch because the deer situation is out of control. They literally walk down the sidewalk and expect you to move over. No fear. I'm with you there. Mike says, I plan on doing one with herbs and veggies, the other two with cutting flowers. So I've seen all the social media posts for sticks, cardboard, mulch, potting soil, etc. What's the best combination, Dale Isla, for raised beds?
For raised beds, I always say go with what is easy and nearby. It partly depends on the height of the raised beds, but a nice combination of soil and compost with either a weed mat or cardboard for mulch works great.
Okay.
Yeah, and check the pH on that, because a lot of times pH, you know, this compost and these soils are just they're all over the place and you just don't know. Yeah. So if you can get something that's got a relatively, you know, balanced pH, 6.5 is really ideal. Even 6.0 is pretty good. If it is off, then at least you'll know how to adjust it.
Don't use topsoil. Mix up some stuff. Don't just take topsoil.
Don't just take topsoil. Yeah. You need to add organics to that for sure. Yep.
And chopped up leaves and things like that are great.
Okay, Greg?
That sounds perfect.
All right, let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. Yep, it's the Gardening Show with Bob, Fred, Greg, and Dale Isla. We'll be back with the calls. Vox Pop on WAMC Gardening Today. Ray Graff with you. We're joined by Dale Isla Riggs, Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Fred Breglia. And we'll do a spinach taste test in a little bit here, but let's jump on the phones. And we'll go to George in Chicopee. George, you're on.
Hi. I love the show. Had a quick question regarding watering either bulbs or like rhododendrons at this time of year, because last spring it got really dry. And when is the earliest to start watering?
It's, you know, it's going to rain quite a bit tonight into tomorrow, and then next week looks also wet. As long as that comes through, it looks like a couple of days in a row of a quarter inch or more, which should add up. So definitely no need to water yet. We're luckily going into, April showers, which is what we want. But certainly if we hit some dry spells, especially as we get closer to summer, so we're really talking about maybe mid, late June, certainly July and August. If we get some couple of weeks of no rain and the weather's warm, you could certainly consider it depending on the location of those plants.
George.
Great.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thanks for the call. It's 800-348-2551. Catherine is in Woodstock. Hello, Catherine.
Hello there. How are you?
Good. Welcome.
Thank you for taking the call.
You bet.
So the house that we bought has 6 barberry bushes in front of it, which I don't like. So I want to replace them, and I want something that that maybe has some berries for the birds and maybe has a nice fall color and is resistant to the voracious deer who live in our area. And I was thinking of an arrowwood viburnum. Any other suggestions or thoughts on that particular plant? Yeah,
so the first question I'd ask you is, how tall do you want them to get? Because a lot of people think, they don't always think of the mature height, but if we put something in that's going to mature to the height you want it, that eliminates a whole bunch of maintenance, pruning, and it can grow out more naturally. So how tall do you think you want these guys to ultimately
be? Waist high.
Like waist high, not like
a 10-foot, Okay. And I understand that there are arrowwood viburnums, but smaller ones.
I don't think I'd do the arrowwood then.
Because that's going to get taller.
They're going to get a lot bigger
than
that.
It's a really big plant, and you want to allow it to get big because that's really its form.
There are some smaller viburnums that would work very well.
That's what they said at the nursery that I called. Yeah, they have big ones now, but they said they have smaller ones coming in. And I am used to pruning the barberries, so I would do some pruning, but I don't want them to be 8-foot. I'm trying to.
They're also listed as invasive as well. So the barberries, good one to get rid of.
One of the plants that I think I've mentioned several times we have is a plant called Fothergilla.
I was going to say that.
It doesn't have a fruit.
Can you spell that, please?
I think so. Let me try. Fothergilla.
That's how I would have spelled it, too.
Okay.
So
it doesn't really have a – that is the genus name. There's 2 different selections, major and gardenii, I believe. And gardenii is a slightly more compact form, but if you do absolutely nothing, 5 feet is really big for them. It's going to stay under 5 feet for the most part. And some reduction pruning every once in a while can easily be done so that you can make them 3 to 4 feet all the time pretty easily.
And people will wonder what that is. You're going to get a lot of questions. It has a really cool flower early in the spring.
Wow.
And a very attractive flower. And we've got one at the Arboretum that's been in the ground. I've been there 28 years now. It was there when I started. I've never needed to prune it. It's a perfect form. People ask for it all the time. So that's a really good one.
If rabbits
does it have a fall color?
It does. It has a killer fall color, actually. It's a really nice reddish orange that it just pops in the fall. And we've got deer everywhere at the Arboretum, but I don't think it's ever been browsed.
If rabbits aren't a problem, you might think about Cotoneaster, too. That has a nice berry on it.
Rabbits like that?
Yeah, they eat the other one, good one's Euonymus, but both the deer and the rabbits would just destroy that.
Again, may I ask you please to spell that?
Spell it Cotton Easter. That's Cotoneaster.
Oh, yep. Another good one, too, is Dutzia, too, is another really cool one. It has an awesome flower.
If it's sunny,
flower.
Potentilla would be another
one. And you have Spireas, too, depending on the size and the color and the amount of flowers you want. Summer bloomers.
I'm back with Dutzia, which I'm trying to spell.
Oh, so I think it's Dutzia, Dutzia.
Do you know what the pH is in the soil there?
Yeah, I did get that tested. I don't remember.
Because you could also, if it's acid, some half-high blueberry bushes.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Would be, they have awesome color.
I thought
color.
About that, but we have such deer.
Yeah.
We have a voracious herd that lives, you know, a few feet away from us, it seems.
Okay. It's, yeah. It's usually it not a favorite of deer. Not that they wouldn't, but they generally don't go
it's
after
the deer.
Blueberries.
It would be the bird, and the birds would also get you, potentially.
Right. Well, that's
but
why
next to the house, it'd be more safe.
Yeah,
she wants
the birds
like
to get
a high
the fruit.
Bush blueberry.
Oh.
Yeah. So these are half high. They'll get 3 to 4 feet tall.
All right, Catherine. Thanks a lot for the call. By the way, barberry. What does it look like?
Dense, kind of
red leaf prickly thing.
Prickly thing. Yeah. It's
You've
it's got
it
thorns all over
it's
it.
It's an invasive.
It's listed now as an invasive. Yeah. It's also a plant that they say harbors a lot of ticks too.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So we're heading into tick season. I hate
and
to say that.
And very painful thorns.
Painful
it
thorns.
It is planted everywhere.
Yeah, overplanted, which is part of the problem.
All right. Gardening today with Fred Breglia, Dale Isla Riggs, Greg Ward, and Bob Graves. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. All right, one more call, and then I think we should try some spinach here for just a moment. Let's go to Reed in Barrisville. Where's Barrisville, Reed?
That would be Bearsville, like the animal.
Ah, well, I know where Bearsville is. All right, go ahead. You're on.
Yeah, Woodstock suburb. I have an iris bed, which we mulched last fall with chopped leaves, and now the irises are poking through the bed of mulch, which is reduced to about 2 inches. And should we clear the mulch out and open up the ground, or should we just leave the mulch there?
Yeah,
and that's my question.
That is a great question. So if, you know, obviously the intention then was originally to remove it because there is some kind of mulching material below it. Is that true?
No, there's just chopped leaves.
And so prior to that, it was just bare soil and iris.
Right.
And the iris are newly planted or they've been there a while?
No, it's an old bed.
Yeah. You know, so probably removing it then would, you know, do you remember what kind of iris they are? I assume if a lot of grassy foliage.
Blue, you know, generic.
Yeah. So that's probably a Siberian type of iris, which forms a great, you know, very nice big colony and doesn't really need any mulching material in between it because there's no room for that, I assume. So, yes, definitely you can rake that off.
Okay.
Well, thanks,
thanks
Reed.
Thanks a lot. That
appreciate
was,
the call.
Good to-
All right, so now, quickly here, let's try some spinach. You got two different types. Dale Isla, what do we got here?
Okay, so the one with red veins and red petioles is called Red Tabby.
Red Tabby?
Yes, Red Tabby.
Interesting. How did that name come about?
Well, the first red spinach, at least that I'm familiar with, was called Red Kitten. How they got named after cats, I don't know.
Okay.
But Red Kitten was a overwintering spinach, whereas the Red Tabby I like because I can plant it in the spring, but it also overwinters.
All right, let's try this one. This is Red Tabby.
Yes.
That's really good.
Yeah, you know, it does taste like a cat. Not kidding.
I've never eaten a cat, so I wouldn't know.
Come on, everyone has, right? That's very good. Oh, I like spicy. Nice.
Spring spinach is my favorite.
Why?
Because since it was exposed to so much cold, it tends to have higher sugar content. That's the plant's antifreeze, basically.
Right.
So the spring spinach always has more sweetness to it than any other time of the year.
I love it. You can sort of taste the earth in this.
Yeah, a little pepperiness.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah, really good.
All right, I'll hand out the rest here.
Yep.
This is the other one.
The green spinach, that is either called Space or Corvair. I couldn't find my
Corvair.
Tags. Corvair.
Oh, I wonder if Ralph Nader is listening.
My mom had one of those.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Nice.
Really? A Corvair?
Used to put 5 kids in it.
You flip up in the air. Here, you guys try some of this, too.
It's really good, too.
Yeah, delicious.
Yeah, but
you did? You didn't have the red one.
I tend to like that red one a little better, almost.
I agree.
Yeah.
Fred.
So, yeah, can we do the test?
Yep.
Well, I just did it.
Well,
I did it.
Ray
too.
And I are done.
I mean, can we talk about it?
Oh,
have at it.
I think the red is fantastic.
Yep.
Yeah,
I
think so,
the
too.
The texture on the red is superior. I mean, you know, spinach has that texture, and some people don't really like that texture.
Yep.
Why?
I don't know.
I don't either.
I like it, but I think I understand maybe why they don't like it. There's a little bit of a, I don't know. I can't
like
I can't
a grit or something.
It. Grit or like a feeling.
I
like
that
texture feeling.
Yeah.
But the red is tougher, thicker leafed, I think, and smoother. A little closer to kale, which I love.
You love kale.
Not only do I love kale, but one of my son-in-laws is named Kale, but with a C, and I do love him as well.
After John Kale, the musician.
No, his first name is Kale. I am not related to the musician.
No, well, I didn't say that you were.
Oh, okay.
All right, let's just move on. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's gardening today. Oh, yeah. And this spinach is fantastic. Now,
they're both really good.
How do you prefer to cook it?
I never cook my spinach.
You don't cook.
I hate cooked spinach.
I agree with you.
It gets awful. Yeah.
I love it in a salad or
Okay, I've got something for you. How about you make the mashed potatoes?
Right.
And then you throw just before you're ready to mush them up.
Yep.
You throw a couple of handfuls or as much as you can spinach
really?
Right in there and mush it all together.
And not cook it, just put it in.
And the potatoes cook
it
for
2 seconds.
Oh, that'll
cook it for sure. Spinach cooks so fast.
Oh, yeah. There's already garlic.
Already garlic.
Butter if you're not vegan. And
this is not the cooking show.
I know.
Get milk.
So that's how you
make
mashed potatoes.
And if you add some spinach, you'll like it.
Wow. I mean, don't you just open the bag and put the hot water in?
No.
No?
Cut up the potatoes.
Oh, dear.
All right.
Sometimes I don't peel them.
You know what? This is a tough room.
Yeah, sometimes I like the skin. Smash them.
800-348-2551. Well, thank you for bringing that. Now, will
you
harvest spinach later in the year, too?
We do grow spinach almost year-round.
Yeah.
Lately, not so much December through February, just because it's playtime for me.
Yes. You do get around.
Yeah, we do have new spinach transplants that will be going in the ground probably in a week.
By the way, how are things and what's going on at the Berry Patch right now?
Things are great at the Berry Patch, and we're busy. We're planting, we're transplanting, we're seeding, we're pruning both raspberries and blueberries, and the strawberries are almost all planted.
Oh,
and
wow.
We're transplanting perennials this morning, and we're seeding tomatoes next week. And my grafted tomatoes will probably go into the ground next week.
This is exciting news. It's the Gardening Show at 800-348-2551. Let's grab another couple of calls before the next break, and then we'll check the email bag again. Joan in Gesnectedy. Joan, hello.
Hello, Ray. And hello, all my gardening friends.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Joan.
What's happening? Hey.
Well, I just needed some advice. And Delilah, I think you're going to be my expert of the day. I'm looking for a patio, a small tomato plant, but not cherry or grape. I mean, a regular whole size fruit, but a small plant. Any ideas?
One that you could try is called Oregon Spring. It's an early one.
Spring.
It's fairly small. The fruit is fairly small as well, but certainly bigger than a cherry. It's like a 50-day tomato plant, and it ought to do great for you.
Ooh, sounds good. Okay, that was the question, and I just want to add on. Okay, yum with the spinach taste test. You got my gastric juices flowing, guys.
Oh, thanks for sharing. Go ahead.
Yeah. All right, thanks. I'll see you next month.
Oh, that was it. Okay, Joan, we'll see you. 800-348-2551. Well, we have time for one more. Did you want to add something, Greg?
I wanted to ask, Delilah, if you're going to have that tomato?
Oregon Spring, probably not.
Okay. So she should find those seeds somewhere.
Yes.
Or ask around.
Yeah. And I would put in a plug here for while we will be starting our tomato plants by seed next week, home gardeners should not yet get their own started. We put ours under lights.
Oh.
We have a heated greenhouse to grow them in.
Yeah.
A home gardener should wait at least until the middle of April
April.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
number
when we
here
generally
is
start ours.
800-348-2551. Let's grab one more here before the next break, and then we'll check the email bag. It's Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs on this edition of The Gardening Show. Joe is in Saugerties. Joe, go ahead.
Good afternoon. I really enjoy your show, especially this one. Ray,
thanks.
I listen to every one of yours I can.
Appreciate it.
My question is, last year I switched to raised beds. I have several raised beds that are 4x8 by 24 inches high, and they worked very well. I had a good mixture in it, good growth, but they dry out quickly. And the other thing is my dirt gets so hard. I'm just wondering if there's some way you can, what you can recommend so that I can keep the dirt soft and moist.
Yep. So good compost, as we had said earlier, to another caller, it's key to keep kind of adding some compost every year, because the organics, the mineral qualities of the soil, the sand, silt, and clay component doesn't really break down easily. So it stays there for a long, long time. And that's the part that kind of starts to get hard. The organics get used up. So that's something that we put back every single year. So, you know, and you don't have to mix them in. You can top it off. If you do a top off every single year, it does incorporate down into the soil profile. But if you wanted to kind of mix it up a little bit, that would speed the process up. But every year, compost. And I would check the pH, as I said before, about compost, because I've had compost that, you know, I've got that were 4.5 pH. And in fact, actually, our compost, when I tested it last time, was like in the 4.5 range. But yeah, I'm adding that to a soil that's like a 7.1, 7.2. And you put it together and you check that pH, and boy, oh boy, we're in a sweet spot right around 6.0.
I always recommend, somebody say, what's the best compost? And what I say is as many different things as you can get. Now, you're gonna use cow manure or leaf mold or mushroom compost or whatever. You know, get many different things, because that inoculates the soil with all sorts of microorganisms and different nutrients.
Yep.
And if you can mix it in, if there's nothing growing there now, geez,
then
go ahead.
Turn it in
a
bit.
Well, let me turn that around for a minute. Oh, go ahead, Greg.
Well, I was just going to follow up on the irrigation and the hard soil thing. So that compost, working that compost in, is going to help the soil. But also creating a mulch layer, it can be more compost. So,
yes.
So you prep the beds, you get them all planted, and then you do reapply, you know, an inch or so of that compost or some kind of mulching material that is going to easily incorporate into the soil, or that you could easily remove later. Like people use straw quite a bit.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can use those little buckwheat hulls. Those aren't a bad thing to use, because they can work in. And that will not only allow the soil to be less likely to harden up, it'll also hold in moisture, so it'll be less likely to need the watering. That said, sounds like you have to water more frequently.
Yep.
Yeah. The other thing is cover those beds in the fall when you're done with leaves. I have a vegetable farmer friend that every year he collects leaves and he puts 6 inches on top of all his fields. And by the next spring, they're all decomposed. The earthworms love it. And
it's amazing how that decomposes that fast.
Yes.
And it does.
And it adds organic matter. And for the water, set up a little drip irrigation system.
Yeah.
You can get them at garden centers. You can get them online. And that is a way to keep everything nice and moist and growing away.
All right, let's take a quick break here. It's Gardening Today. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We'll be back. Oh, they're all grabbing the spinach out of big bags like it's a bank robbery. It's wonderful. Hey, guess what? The gardening show is heading on the road Earth Day at the Landis Arboretum. It's April 22nd at 2 p.m. We'd love to have you there. It'll be the gardening all-stars, most of them, and you can ask your questions live in person, and we'll turn it into a radio show to air on Memorial Day. You can find out more, WAMC.org/on the road. The Landis Arboretum is really cool. I had a look at some pictures of the room. It's going to be fun. WAMC.org/on the road. All right, everybody got enough spinach now? Are we all good?
Well,
we're all good.
I filled the bag. I don't know. I was hoping for 2 bags.
I got to get a little more before the end of the show.
I've got some room still in mine.
All right, this email from Nan and Wilton. My blueberry patch has peeling bark from the canes. These bushes are not thriving. They rarely produce. Bushes do not thrive. Here's what's constantly in my property. We are surrounded by fungal infections every year. Powdery mildew, beech trees are invaded by fungal infection, now the hemlock. My 4-year-old peach trees immediately were infected by another kind of fungal infection that looks like it's winning, oozing peach-tasting gel from every orifice. What a fine choice of words. My lilac are also toast. Another manifestation of how awful fungal infections can be. In short, we are surrounded by this stuff. Question, is that what I'm seeing on my blueberries? Maybe I should start a mushroom farm instead. And that's from Nan.
My suspicion is that the blueberries probably need some heavy-duty pruning, and they need some fertilizer, And I'm wondering if they may need more light. I'm wondering if if there's too many trees around and you're not getting enough light for things to really thrive.
When you have fungal problems, it's usually because it's not enough light or maybe not enough airflow. You know,
right.
If you're surrounded by trees or buildings and you have no airflow, something's going on. She's got fungus on everything.
Yeah.
And not all funguses are bad, just to, you right. know, a credit, shout out to the funguses out there in the world.
Shout out to the funguses. I'm sure they're listening.
I mean, plants basically need fungus in their root system to live. Mycorrhizae is the essence of plant symbiosis.
Dude, that has never been said in the history of radio. Well, okay. Shout out to the funguses out there.
There you go.
There you go.
Yes, because it should have been fungi.
Fungi.
That's right. Yes,
fungi.
It's public radio.
Fungus.
That's right.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Right.
Jay says, what are the lowest growing evergreen trees and also taller and conical shaped trees for a grouping together?
Oh, you got basically arbor.
Repeat that one.
What are the lowest growing evergreen trees, also taller and conical shaped trees for a grouping together?
So the lowest growing evergreens are things that literally what we call prostrate. They crawl on the ground.
Okay.
They don't get more than a couple of feet tall. And they can get quite wide. And then you can also get some extreme dwarf conifers that are made for like rock gardens. And boy, oh boy, they take years and years to,
junipers,
to get larger.
He's asking. It sounds like
it's two different things.
Two questions. Without punctuation. I'm doing the best I can.
Does Mugo pine do okay around here?
Oh yeah, Mugo pine, junipers, yews if you don't have a deer problem, but you can't do it if you have.
But Mugo's not going to be too short, and it's not conical.
For a small tree, a yew could work. It's just you're going to find it in this little sheared. Shape, and it will be years before it looks like a tree.
You know, the ones, the dwarf Alberta spruce.
Real common one, that is.
Yep. Arborvitae. There are some shorter arborvitaes. The question really is, what do you got for deer? Because it's going to really limit your...
And what do you have for time? I mean, if you plant something that's 4 to 5 feet today, it's going to take 10 or 15 years for it to be, 20, 25 feet
at least.
And maybe longer. So you may want to use something that's going to get too big, but not for you in the time period you're thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Number here is 800-348-2551. Ryan is trying it again. Ryan tried this earlier in the month and didn't get through. Tree of Heaven. There are two mature Tree of Heavens in my yard that have unfortunately become a haven for thousands of spotted lanternflies and the yellow jackets who eat them. What's the best way to remove these trees? The mess the flies make is awful, and I'd like to mitigate that before they come back this summer.
Cut them down.
Hire a tree company to remove them.
Yep. The issue will be that timing is a little bit of a problem with those. They tend to want to sprout out pretty heavily. So a lot of times when you cut them, they're going to sprout. I don't think there's a really,
stump grinding.
There's no real great time to cut these guys. So
but then you just keep cutting
them. So yeah, I was going to say, you have to be ready for the sprouts and then just keep cutting those sprouts and you wear them out.
It was a locust, an old black locust, and that it cut down and it sprouted up through
the lawn.
It'll
do that too.
Okay. I had to mow those sprouts for years until they went away.
But you will get them. But if
you'll get them.
You know, just don't let them put out a lot of leaves and let them keep photosynthesizing. You need to keep cutting them. But you'll win.
All right, so one more email for now, and then we'll go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Betty in Wilbraham writes, love the show. Would you please give advice on how to successfully grow potatoes? Do you plant in a mound of dirt or shavings? I'm going to try growing Yukon Golds. Thank you, and that's from Betty.
So we probably all have a little bit of a technique for potatoes.
Yeah, I personally like potatoes in raised beds. They're easy to pull out. You just stick them 4 to 6 inches deep. You need good seed stock to begin with. You don't want to just take potatoes off the supermarket shelf. Cut them into eyes and let them cut them into pieces that have eyes. Let them dry for maybe 5 to 7 days to heal over, and then pop them in the ground. You can put straw mulch on top, and then you just reach under the straw to harvest the tubers. So that's my favorite way.
And when we grow them, we dig a trench, and then we put them in. And then as they grow, we continue to take all the soil that we took out of that trench and pile them up over the stems of those plants. And the more you pile up the soil, the more potatoes, because they are a tuber, the more potatoes you get. And so
it's better in softer ground, any root crop like
that. It is. I mean, so having an organic, they like you know, good organic soil. So, you know, if you have a garden that has good organic soil, you have a sort of a step in the right direction.
When I first planted potatoes, was you cut them up, you get a whole lot of pieces. I planted a whole lot. I got an awful lot of potatoes the first time.
I use Fred's method, but I have once or twice used the raised container, like wire basket method. But both ways, and I think certainly the raised container method more, you need to remember to water them, that they can they can dry out, especially the higher that container is.
Okay.
And if you do the trenches in the ground, they probably will stay more moist more frequently.
Yeah,
more,
especially if you have an organic soil, which they like. And, you know, even during those droughts that we've had in the summer, we've had very little, we don't have a ton of water available for watering gardens. And I will say, when we dug up our potatoes, they were really good, and we didn't really do a heck of a lot of irrigation, just good building soil over years.
It's the Gardening Show today, 800-348-2551. Let's jump back to the phone. Susan is in Schenectady. Susan, go ahead.
Hi. How's everyone today?
So great.
Very well.
Good. Good.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous day. I need to go back to the office, and I don't want to leave the springtime air. But anyway, so my question was about some dahlias, beautiful dahlias that my oldest daughter, who lives with me, planted last year. Now, we're somewhat seasoned gardeners, but not so much. I mean, this was kind of a new adventure. The dahlias were beautiful. She didn't get the bulbs out of the ground to store them this winter before the snow covered everything and the ground froze. A couple days ago, she dug one up and said, yeah, I think I lost it, but to me, it looks like the kind of bulbs you buy in the store. What's the likelihood that they're still good? Should we just leave them in the ground and see what they do?
The likelihood is not good. The prognosis is not good. They don't want to freeze. They don't want to freeze. However, you never know. I mean, if the ground didn't freeze where they were, we got a lot of snow this year, and for some reason, if they were up near the house and they didn't freeze, it's possible they're still alive.
You have nothing to lose by waiting at this point.
And it may be that the tubers further down that are deeper may have made it, whereas the ones up by the soil surface didn't.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, thanks. Go ahead.
May I ask another question about compost? So we have this ongoing argument about our compost, Ben. I'm of the ilk that you throw everything in it and just try to keep the brown to green ratio going as best you can. Should I be avoiding things that have seeds?
If you're composting correctly, then theoretically the piles are of a certain size, which means that the internal temperatures of that pile over the course of a year can get hot enough to destroy a lot of the seeds. But in general, if I'm, you know, cutting things out that I don't want around, I tend to not put a lot of those extra seeds in there just to be safe. And I will say that on the Arboretum website, we do have a compost recipe of sorts, some guidelines.
Okay.
So there, you know, you may want to take a look at that. You know, do's, don'ts, size requirements. They like, you know, full sun is better for a compost pile than shade. Otherwise, a lot of those mixing those, you know, layers. So that we call it lasagna composting, sort of like layers of different. Yep.
All right, Susan. Thanks a lot. Let's go to Poughkeepsie. Richard, you're on.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm calling from Poughkeepsie, and I was living in Baltimore until recently, and we had these yews that were lovely, except they never grew more than half a foot or a foot because the deer ate them. And the landscaper said, oh, I've got something to replace those. And now I'm here in Poughkeepsie, and I'd love to know the name of that plant. So it's a deer-resistant yew.
I don't know. There are some English yews that sound like they might.
Yeah, I mean, an English yew, there are English yews that will only grow, you know, less than 2 feet tall. So that's, I think, you know, why we're thinking if yours were short, but if it was only because of deer browse, then that sort of throws that out the window.
There's no yew that's been promoted as being deer resistant.
No, I mean, usually boxwood.
So yews are slow growing anyway, right? Yeah.
They are really slow growing. They do tend to be enjoyed by deer. They can live for extremely, extremely long periods of time. I mean,
yeah, I think you're right. Boxwood is one of the 2,000 most common substitutes.
Yeah,
for that.
Boxwood is very deer resistant and is very trimmable and does, you know, comes in a couple of selections, so that size, you know, you mm-hmm. can choose the size you want to keep it. So my feeling is, or our feeling is, that they recommended a boxwood and just called it a yew.
Uh-huh. No, I was watering them for a year to keep them alive. So they were very much yew like. You know, I'll landscaper in Baltimore and find out what they were. But yeah. Your best suggestion is an English yew.
Yeah,
probably if you know in terms of staying really small and I would say probably being a little bit more resistant to deer.
It
but
might be all right in Poughkeepsie. We can't grow them up here. It's a little too cold in the Albany area.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm sure it'd be fine in Poughkeepsie though. And I think if you want the short one, it's English yew, but it's Baccata repandens, so it's Taxus Baccata repandens, as in little.
We used to do Taxus tauntoni, which would
Can you say that again
survive.
Or spell it?
Oh, don't ask me to spell it.
Hey, you started it, Latin man.
Like you said, so you is
it
Taxus,
sounds like you said
right?
Baccata, like the
yeah.
Italian food.
Yes,
Baccata.
I did. I think it's B-A, there's some C's in there, and then A-T-A.
It's a little vague, Richard, I'm sorry. But
I think there's two C's, that's why I'm not sure.
I think there is two C's.
And,
yeah.
and
this
then
is a spelling show.
And then repandens is R-E-P-A-N-D-E-N-S.
Right.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Richard, thank you very much. All right, Sandy writes in, Dale Isla, can you elaborate on why home gardeners should wait until April to start the tomato plants? I've always started mine in February, says Sandy, with a heating pad and a grow light. I transplant them twice before they go into the ground, planting them deeper each time, and the root system is always wonderful.
Yeah, that's certainly true. Most home gardeners don't have enough light. So even if you have like a south-facing window that's really bright, that's just not enough light, and they're going to get super tall and super leggy. We start ours under lights, and if people want to do that and have them under banks of lights, that's fine. But then you need to keep raising the lights. You don't want to have the lights be more than 1 inch above the top of the plant for them to actually be getting enough light.
I don't think you'd gain much, though. You don't gain much in terms of you can't plant them out.
Well, if
that's
you wanted
true.
To, yeah, but if you wanted to grow tomatoes under like real grow lights,
oh, I mean, if you wanted to grow them inside, that's
you,
a whole different
you
deal.
You can grow them, and you can also start them earlier.
I mean, a lot of what you buy in the store now is under
right.
Lights.
You can produce some crazy indoor plants, and you can start tomatoes whenever you want. But like Delilah said, you definitely need grow lights. You're not going to do that with a really sunny south, facing window.
And to keep potting them up is exactly what you need to do. But if you're planting them outside, there's only you have to wait a certain amount of time before you can plant them outside.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bob in Chester, Connecticut, an audio engineer. And offhand, Bob, were you annoyed by the wrinkling of all the bags for about 15 minutes on the show as an audio engineer? Bob says, cooking spinach. I like raw spinach and salads and whatnot, but my favorite way to cook it is to put it in a strainer or colander in the sink and a kettle of boiling water over it. And then you pour that over the spinach. The spinach wilts, but it remains crunchy, and it's a nice side dish, especially for those who grew up influenced by Popeye's spinach endorsement. I believe this might be called blanching. But I stumbled upon it some years ago, and that's from Bob.
Yep, and that's a good way to go. It's it's real easy to spinach cooks in literally like within seconds. It cooks so fast. So overcooking it is the easiest, so easy to do. So that would help not overcook it.
All right. Fran and Gallatin writes in, what to do about mole holes in my yard? What has been a perennial garden now near it is mole holes. What am I going to do? We have about a minute.
Well, if it's moles, their primary food source is earthworms. And you don't want to do anything about that.
Yeah, they're going to go away. As you get out there in the yard, they're going to run off to the woods, and you won't see them again until next fall.
You can use mouse traps.
Yep. Just make sure it's not a vole. A vole is more of a plant eater. It'll eat roots. It'll eat, bulbs. It'll eat stems.
I like Dale Isla's cure for voles.
Yeah, so that is take about a 4-inch diameter pipe and put it along the edge of whatever, a raised bed or a house or a greenhouse or whatever, and put a couple mouse traps in each end, and that's where voles run, and so you get them in the mouse traps. And
so it's like a Chuck E. Cheese playground for the voles.
You're going to catch them, and catch them. They can do 24 in a litter in a vole.
And the good thing about her method is that it's not going to get the mole.
Right.
So the moles are safe moles to are eat not, grubs not, and other things.
I mean, we're almost out of time here, but I mean, Fred's method is so much more colorful to get rid of. The, you know, you grind them up.
No,
as a warning to the others. It's a long, long story. But we're almost out of time. Fred, if people want to find out about the Landis Arboretum, how do you do it?
Yep. So it's landisarboretum.org, and we're at 174 Lape Road in Esperance, New York. And if you're at the Garden and Flower Expo Friday and Saturday, come say hello. I'm there at 11 doing the talk and also at 1.
All right, man. Good. And Dale Isla Riggs, the Berry Patch.
TheBerryPatch.net. We'll be putting tomatoes and other things out for sale on the honor system starting the middle of May.
You got to watch that honor
system. Ring cam included.
Greg That's Ward, right. I know the honor system is a pretty big deal over at Ward's Nursery. What are you
sure
doing?
Is.
How do they find you?
So Ward's Nursery is at 600 South Main Street in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. And we have a website that's wardsnursery.com.
Bob Graves, Fadigan.
Fadigansnursery.com. We're at 1140 Troy Schenectady Road, 2.5 miles west of the Northway in Latham. And we will also be at the gardening show.
Well, thank you all for being here. And Dale Isla, I don't know, are you planning on leaving the twigs?
I'm taking them home.
Okay, fair enough. That's nice. Support comes from Schoharie Valley Farms, the Carrot Barn. Open year-round, offering their own farm produce, a farm-to-table cafe, and greenhouses showing the season's colors. State Route 30, SchoharieValleyFarms.com. And Bonham and Douglas Architects, an architecture and interior design studio creating custom restaurant interiors like Firefly in Lenox, Massachusetts, bd-arc.com. Thanks again to Fred, Bob, Greg, and Dale Isla for being here. Thank you. Thanks to Mike Bowen, our engineer. Susie Checkeye screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's another baking session with Chef Gail Sokol. We'll see you at 2:00.